Thank you very much, Bill, and thank you for the invitation to come and talk. What I wanted to talk about today was a body of work that has spanned well over 20 years. And it has to, the main subject is trying to understand so-called periodic hematological diseases. These are unusual diseases. I'll show you four examples during the course of the talk. But the main characteristic that all of these diseases have is that one or more cell type, hematological cell type, has a number that fluctuates relatively periodically in time in the blood, with periods ranging from weeks to months. And the reason that I have spent a considerable amount of time studying these is not because they are overwhelmingly common and affect a great number of patients. Rather, the reason for studying them is that they give great insight into the control mechanisms that the body employs to regulate cell numbers. And so by using a combination of clinical data analysis as well as mathematical modeling, you can actually get some insight into how some of these diseases arise, and you can actually pinpoint the probable cause for the disease by using the mathematical modeling. And in one happy circumstance, the mathematical modeling actually suggests a way to treat the disease. So just to give you an outline of where we're going, I'm going to tell you a little bit about how blood cells get produced, quote some numbers, which I think are pretty astonishing in terms of the absolute magnitude of hematological blood cell production in humans, and then go on to talk a little bit generally about how blood cell production is controlled, and then look at two diseases that involve a derangement of peripheral control and two others that probably involve a derangement of so-called central or stem cell control. And these terms will become clear in the course of what I have to say. The three major blood cell types that float around in your body are red cells. Here's a red cell right there. There's another one, another one. Red cells are responsible for keeping your tissues well oxygenated because they carry oxygen bound to hemoglobin and they release it. The second major cell type are platelets. Here's a platelet right there. There's another one there. And platelets are responsible for clotting, so that if you cut yourself, you hopefully, if you have functional platelet clotting mechanisms, you will not bleed to death. And they're also responsible for keeping your body essentially from becoming a big bag of mush, because they are involved in all sorts of repair mechanisms and small capillaries. And then finally you have white cells here, which in the entire white cell or neutrophil system is involved in maintaining a defense mechanism against infection. Pardon me? This one? That's a red cell on edge. Okay, you can just, if you look, you can barely see the sort of biconcave aspect of it there. So it's just sort of sitting on its side. The absolute production of blood cells by humans is staggering. I didn't actually realize what it was like until about 2 years ago. And if you look in hematology books, they're always quoting figures of billions of cells produced per kilogram per day, but I can never make sense of numbers like that. It doesn't mean anything to me. It's like listening to Paul Martin talk about the national debt. But if you actually take these numbers and translate them into a weight, you know, the actual weight of cells being produced, then in the course of your lifetime, your body produces half a metric ton of red blood cells. It was absolutely staggering. And 160 kilos of white cells and about 30 kilos of platelets, which means that every 10 years, your body is essentially reproducing its entire body weight of 70 kilograms, more or less, just in terms of hematological cell production. Now, people that do mathematical modeling like myself and people who study systems like hematological systems always like to pay attention to laboratory animals, because you can't always do things clinically. And one laboratory animal that's the darling of experimental hematologists is the mouse. And this is just a cautionary note, because the mouse has a very different production system, because they only produce 60% of their entire body weight in the course of their lifetime in terms of hematological cell types. So in spite of the fact that we derive a great deal of information about hematological production and control from the mouse, we also have to remember that there's something quite different about the way they do it, and the differences are not totally clear. The nature of the control of blood cell production is interesting and complicated. There are well over 40 different chemicals which are called cytokines that have now been identified that are involved in the regulation of blood cell production. And what I've tried to do is abstract this down to three major types. I'm going to work from the periphery back in. So here we have platelets and red cells and the neutrophil series. All of these cells are circulating in the blood. Working back, for example, if we look at platelets, there's a population of platelet precursors in the bone marrow. And these cells have a proliferative phase, and then they stop proliferating and they continue to mature before they're actually released into the circulation. And in the bone marrow preceding these platelet precursors, there is an even more primitive type of precursor which is already committed to produce platelets, and these are so-called megakaryocytic stem cells. The regulation of this system is very similar to the regulation of red cell and neutrophil production. Namely, it's mediated by a particular molecule. In this case, it's called thrombopoietin. And thrombopoietin is one of these 40 different cytokines that's known to regulate blood cell production. And from a mathematical modeling standpoint, or from an engineering standpoint, this is a negative feedback control system, because a fall in platelet numbers leads to an increase in thrombopoietin levels, which conversely leads to an increase in production by the megakaryocytic stem cells, and this production is translated into an increased flux of cells into this compartment, and ultimately into an increase in circulating platelet numbers. So it's essentially negative feedback. The thing that makes it interesting from a mathematical modeling standpoint is that there's negative feedback, and there's also a significant time delay built into the system, because it takes about 8 to 10 days between a signal being delivered back to the stem cell compartment and actually seeing an altered production of platelets showing up in the circulation. So we've got a negative feedback system with time delays, and the time delays can be more or less complicated, as I'll show you. Precisely the same general scheme works for regulation of red blood cell production. Each one of these has little variations on a theme, but they're not important for this morning's talk. And the same thing is true for the neutrophils. Now, all three of these primitive committed stem cell compartments are progeny of an uncommitted stem cell compartment, the so-called hematopoietic stem cell. And you've been reading a lot about stem cell research in the newspapers the last few weeks and few months and few years. And these stem cells here may indeed be actually much more totipotent than people have ever thought, because there actually have been reports of reconstituting essentially whole animals using putative hematopoietic stem cells. So our actual knowledge of the biology of these stem cells is pretty primitive at this point. The one thing that is completely clear is that there are also regulatory mechanisms that function back here in the stem cell compartment to regulate their numbers and to regulate the efflux of cells into all three of these major cell lines, and I'll talk about those in a minute. Now, in terms of diseases of peripheral control, by that I mean a disease involving either platelets or red cells or neutrophils where there's a derangement of this negative feedback control system. And so typically the hallmark of these diseases of peripheral diseases is that you'll see something screwy going on with one cell type in the circulation. And the first example I'm going to show you is one that involves platelet regulation. It's called cyclical thrombocytopenia. And this is a relatively rare disease. Gee, that's really, can people see that? It's too bright. Anyway, this is an example of data from about 10 different women. On the left, you'll see panels with the platelet numbers as a function of time. And I apologize that it's so faint. Here, for example, you see this woman's platelet count oscillating from normal levels to zero and then back up again over a period of 200 days. And she actually has a period of 65 days. The right-hand panels are the so-called long periodograms of these data. This is just a variant of Fourier spectral analysis that was adapted for unequally sampled data. It was developed by the people in the astrophysics community. And in these women, we see periods of platelet numbers, platelet oscillations ranging from 65 days at a maximum to about 13 days at the low point. So there's quite a range of oscillation periods in these data. And if you look at the corresponding data in men, there's nothing particularly different that catches the eye. Again, a broad range of periods ranging from, I think, the earliest or the lowest was about 23 days up to about 40 some odd days. Now, one of the interesting things about this so-called disorder is that occasionally you'll find somebody who's apparently completely normal hematologically that shows an oscillation in platelet numbers. For example, this person right here, this is a medical student who has a very pronounced oscillation with a 30-day period in platelet numbers, but never reported any clinical symptoms whatsoever. This was discovered simply during a routine study by an Australian hematologist. Here is another example of a woman with oscillations, subnormal oscillations with a period of 23 days. So occasionally, it looks like the platelet control system in apparently normal people can actually become unstable and start to oscillate. But the real question from a modeling standpoint is what exactly goes on. What we want to do is really try to understand the origin of these kind of oscillations, and if we were really lucky, we'd like to be able to predict things like amplitude and period based on some underlying physiological change. Now, of all the patients that we've been able to analyze data for, we've found a range of periods between 2 weeks and 65 days. It only seems to affect the platelets and their precursors. And as far as we can tell, the actual origin is extremely unclear, except for one group of patients, there has been an implication of some autoimmune effect. And the patients that we've studied in which an autoimmune defect was implicated all had periods at the low end of the spectrum, between about 2 weeks and 4 weeks. There's another type of periodic or cyclical thrombocytopenia, and these patients tend to have much longer periods. And if you're interested, the analysis of the clinical data was published in the Journal of Theoretical Medicine. In trying to look at a model for this disease, you want to focus on this control loop right here. And basically what you want to try to do is put together a realistic model for platelet production and see whether you can understand how this funny disorder could arise. And so you've got, from a generic point of view, all of these peripheral control loops. You have a stem cell compartment, you have this proliferation maturation compartment, the circulating cells, and then the cytokine-mediated feedback. From the types of models that you find that are useful to describe these, useful in the sense that they mirror the underlying physiology, typically are relatively simple to write down. You have a balance. The rate of change of the circulating cell numbers is made up simply of a balance between the production, here, this F, and the destruction, this minus gamma X. So the loss here, gamma X, is the flux of cells to death. And the input here is this F of X tilde, which is simply the number of cells coming in from the bone marrow. The things that become interesting from a mathematical standpoint is that the argument here is X tilde, because it's basically a convolution, because you have a distribution of time delays in the bone marrow for these precursor cells. And not only is there a distribution of time delays, but from a mathematical standpoint, the thing that's important is that there's a minimal delay that's positive, and it's typically on the order of 2 to 3 days. For both platelets and for red cells and for neutrophils, we're lucky in the sense that we actually have good clinical data on normal individuals and sometimes on people who are hematologically diagnosed with hematological diseases, and we actually know what the distribution of the maturation times looks like. And typically, we've been able to fit those data fairly readily using the density of the gamma distribution. And finally, the function that's used to reflect the negative feedback characteristics mediated by the cytokines, whatever it happens to be, we've always picked something that looks like a Hill function simply because it's relatively flexible and it also seems to fit the clinical data and the laboratory data that we have available. The modeling of cyclical thrombocytopenia, to summarize, indicates that for the autoimmune type of disorder, where you can estimate all the parameters in this problem. And that's one of the beauties of it. There's enough data that you can actually write down what all the parameters are with a fair degree of confidence. And the modeling, the analysis of the model in conjunction with numerical simulations indicates that for the autoimmune variant of the disease, where you have periods between 2 and 4 weeks, that the oscillation is probably a consequence of a supercritical Hopf bifurcation in that model. And that bifurcation is triggered by an abnormally high rate of platelet death in the circulation. So basically what happens is, because of the autoimmune effect, you have platelets being destroyed at a higher than normal rate. This higher than normal destruction rate leads to a destabilization of the control system via Hopf bifurcation, and you get these oscillations in circulating platelet numbers, and the model also predicts that you should see the oscillations throughout the bone marrow with a temporal shift, which is precisely what's seen clinically. We don't know what's going on with the amegakuriocytic version of cyclical thrombocytopenia. These are the patients that had periods of 4 weeks or longer, but I suspect that it's probably some kind of a defect in the megakaryocytic stem cell. The second example that I want to talk about in terms of a peripheral disease is one that involves red cells, and it's a so-called periodic hemolytic anemia, autoimmune hemolytic anemia. And one of the nice things about this particular disorder is you can actually induce it in a laboratory animal. And this is an example of some data that were published almost 30 years ago at this point by a group of English hematologists, in which they induced this periodic anemia in rabbits. And they did it by the simple expedient of raising isoantibodies to the rabbits on red cells and then reinjecting them on a daily basis. So effectively, what they have done is to increase the peripheral destruction rate of circulating red blood cells. And the consequence was a very pronounced oscillation in the hemoglobin level during the course of this treatment. This is over a 130-day period. And this oscillation in hemoglobin levels is out of phase with the oscillation that you see in the red cell precursors. And the period that you get from this through the data analysis is about 16 or 17 days. So just as in looking at cyclical thrombocytopenia, what you want to try to do is put together a pretty realistic model that incorporates all of the underlying physiology and see if you can understand what's happening. And since the only defect that we know about in this type of periodic anemia is an elevation in peripheral destruction rates, then you would suspect that this is going to actually be the origin of the oscillations that you see, and indeed it is, because precisely as for the platelets, you predict that there should be another hot bifurcation if you increase the death rate in the circulation, and you can actually predict from the parameter estimation what the period should be, what the hot period is. Now, the interesting thing about both of these diseases is that there is another prediction, namely that if you were able to increase the peripheral destruction rate even higher than it has been taken by the underlying physiological defect, then you should be able to restabilize the system. So you should go through a reverse bifurcation and stabilize the system at a much lower than normal steady state. There's not any particular advantage in doing that with periodic anemia, but for cyclical thrombocytopenia there would be if it actually worked, because what you would be able to do is stabilize the system at a relatively low but also a relatively stable number of platelets, and you would avoid this dip during the oscillation down to platelet levels that are virtually zero in some patients. Unfortunately, it's not totally clear how to do that, and I think most hematologists would balk at the idea of actually instituting a therapy that exacerbated an underlying cause. So that's not something that has actually been pursued. Now, cyclical neutropenia is another disease, and this is not, I think, a disease of a peripheral order or peripheral origin. This is one of the first examples that I know of where the disease was intensively studied over a long period of time. And not only were neutrophil numbers looked at, these are the neutrophils right here in Mrs. H, and you see that they go from virtually zero up to low normal levels and then back down to zero. And if you look at the corresponding analysis using the Lalonde periodogram, this corresponds to a period of about 20 days for her. Now, the interesting thing is this study was done by a collaborator of mine, David Dale, in the 1970s at the National Institutes of Health. And they not only collected neutrophil data, but they collected data on all the circulating blood cell types. And what they found, or at least by looking at it by eye, they suspected that there were oscillations in all of them. And indeed, there are, because you see the lymphocytes have an oscillation at the same period as do the monocytes and the red cell precursors and reticulocytes. There also, however, is this unusual oscillation at a much lower frequency or higher period in the platelets and in the reticulocytes. This is the only patient with cyclical neutropenia that we've ever seen this in. And a few years ago, I was fortunate enough to get hold of a huge set of clinical trial data from a clinical trial that David Dale ran. And what we found was that in all the patients that we had decent data, that when we looked at them, there were oscillations not only in neutrophils, but also in lymphocytes and monocytes and reticulocytes and platelets. So the fact is that in patients that have cyclical neutropenia, you're seeing oscillations in all the circulating cells. And one of the nice things about this disease is we have an animal model. And the animal model is the gray collie. Here you see a couple of collie pups from the same litter. This is a normal puppy. And this is her gray collie litter mate. All gray collies, and they're called gray collies because they have this typically gray color, which doesn't come through too well here, but all gray collies have cyclical neutropenia without fail. You can take a gray collie and lethally irradiate them to destroy all of their bone marrow and do a bone marrow transplant from a normal litter mate to that irradiated animal, and they'll be hematologically normal. And you can do the reverse experiment, destroy the normal dog's bone marrow and transplant bone marrow from the gray collie into it, and now this previously normal collie will have cyclical neutropenia. So this is a defect that's in the bone marrow, and it's probably a stem cell defect. And because of the fact that these gray collies have this disorder, and because people like David Dale have maintained colonies of them for about 30 years, we actually know a great deal about this disease. The only thing that's different in the gray collie from humans is that the period of the oscillation is much shorter. The period tends to be on the order of 2 weeks in the gray collies, and it tends to be 3 weeks or longer in humans. And it's so completely faint you can't see it, so I'm not going to spend more time on it. So the notion is that if you've got an oscillation out here in the periphery that involves platelets, involves red cells, involves the neutrophils, and it even involves the lymphocytes, the most likely explanation is that the oscillation is somehow coming out of these stem cell compartments here. Now, although I think that's a reasonable assumption, and most clinicians also think it's a reasonable assumption, interestingly enough, there have been at least 10 to 15 papers in the last 20 years where they have actually looked at cyclical neutropenia as a peripheral control defect. And the problem is that if you actually hypothesize that it's due to a destabilization of the peripheral control and you put together what you know about regulation and neutrophil production in either humans or dogs, you can get virtually all of the parameters, but you predict incorrect periods for the oscillations, the amplitudes are incorrect, and the response of the system to one of the major controlling cytokines is also inappropriate. So the conclusion is that it's not due to a destabilization of the peripheral control, but if you take that model for peripheral control and assume that the input from the stem cell compartment is oscillating, then you can actually explain some of the interesting characteristics of the data that you find in the gray collies. Now, if you want to try to understand cyclical neutropenia as a central defect, a stem cell defect, you have to put together some kind of relatively realistic model for the cell kinetics here in the stem cell compartment. We don't know a lot about stem cell physiology. As I said before, our knowledge is actually quite primitive. But if you essentially tailor the model to fit the level of data that you have, then a relatively good model involves a division of the stem cells into two functional categories. First, the proliferating phase cells. These are the cells that are going through DNA synthesis, through the so-called G2 gap, and through mitosis. And then once they finish mitosis, they go through cytokinesis and produce two daughter cells, and these two daughter cells go into a resting phase of the cell cycle. Now, this model was put together as a conceptual framework based on liver regeneration many years ago, and it does capture the essence of what goes on in cell replication in almost every tissue of our bodies. G0 phase cells either sit there for a long period of time. For example, all the cells in your nervous system are in G0. All your neurons have stopped proliferating and they're sitting in a resting phase. And so a lot of the current work that's done in neural regeneration is to try to figure out how to trigger these resting phase cells in the nervous system to go back into proliferation. And certainly in the stem cells, this is a constantly ongoing process because some of these guys sit here, some of them re-enter the proliferative phase and produce more cells. And finally, some of these G0 phase cells actually differentiate out into platelet or red cell or neutrophil lines. Now, there are two aspects of this from a modeling standpoint that, again, are interesting, and they're not too dissimilar from what was going on in the modeling of the peripheral control. First is the nonlinearity of this control mechanism for cell reentry into proliferation, because this rate beta is, in point of fact, under control of the tissue, as well as a lot of other factors that we don't understand. So beta itself has a monotone decreasing nature as a function of the stem cell population. The other important thing is that the length of time required for cells to traverse this proliferating phase of the hematopoietic stem cells is long, and it's on the order of about 3 to 4 days in mammals, as far as we can estimate. So you have a system with a long time delay built into it, and the question is whether you can actually understand what's going on in terms of the characteristics of cyclical neutropenia. The final thing that turns out to be extremely important to incorporate into this is the fact that cells in the proliferating phase also undergo a type of cellular death, which is called apoptosis, and cells during this phase that are unable to successfully complete DNA synthesis, for example, will be go down a pre-programmed pathway to cell death, and other cells that have successfully completed DNA synthesis but were unable to successfully complete synthesis of division proteins will also be shutted down this death pathway. The types of equations that you see to model these dynamics are not terribly difficult to understand. They can be derived from sort of time, age, maturity, transport equations, first-order PDEs, and if you apply the appropriate boundary conditions, then you can usually write them down in terms of differential delay equations. And if you just look at the equation for the rate of change of the G0 phase cell numbers, you can see exactly where all the terms come from, because you have a loss here, minus delta N is the differentiation flux, and beta times N is the flux of cells leaving G0 to go back into proliferation. And then the input to this system right here is just 2 times beta of N times N. So it's twice the flux that came in here. That's what goes back into G0. And it's delayed by a period of time tau, the length of time required to complete the proliferative phase. And then the exponential prefactor, e to the minus gamma tau, simply accounts for the fact the cells in the proliferating phase can die at a rate gamma. So the equations are very simple to write down, and you can easily understand the origins of the terms. The question is, can you actually estimate the parameters for this system? You can, with some difficulty, and I must say some lack of certainty. And the interesting thing is the fact that the model is completely incapable of explaining the characteristics of cyclical neutropenia in humans, except if you assume that the cell death rate, the rate of apoptosis in the proliferating phase, is higher than normal. And under that circumstance, if you make that hypothesis that you have an abnormally high number of cells dying in the proliferative phase of the cell cycle, then what you predict is that the flux of cells out into all the differentiation pathways should be a decreasing function of the rate of apoptosis. That makes sense. The more cells you're killing off, the fewer that you can actually get to differentiate. And if you get the rate of apoptosis high enough, you will eventually drive the output of the system to zero. The thing that's interesting and most pertinent for cyclical neutropenia is that if you estimate the parameters for the system and then look and see what the stability of this system is as you increase gamma, what you find is that, for example, on this curve here corresponding to that set of parameters, you initially would predict that you would destabilize the system at a certain value of gamma with a period of 19 days. And this is again through a hop bifurcation, and it would restabilize again with a period of about 25 days. Now, if you take the range of parameters that we estimate is probably appropriate for humans, this says that we should see periods of for cyclical neutropenia, if this is what it's due to, ranging from about 16 days at the lowest to about 43 days at the highest. Estimating this, going through the same procedure for dogs, gives qualitatively the same picture, but quantitatively different in the sense that the periods are much lower. For example, it ranged here from a low of 9 days to a high of 25 days. And in the gray collie, we only see periods, cyclical neutropenia periods, between about 9 days and a maximum of about 14 to 15 days. So the hypothesis is that cyclical neutropenia is due to abnormally high rates of apoptosis in the stem cell compartment. Now, this was a hypothesis that was put forward many years ago, and at the time, rather soundly rejected by hematologists as being completely nonsensical because they could not conceive of why you would have a situation where you'd have stem cells that were being killed off during the proliferative phase of the cell cycle. But if you look at the predictions of the model, then this captures the essence of what was in the previous slide. The efflux of the from the stem cells is a function of the rate of apoptosis, declines and is stable until it reaches some critical value of gamma. It undergoes a Hopf bifurcation, and you have a zone of instability, and as you go through there, the amplitude of the ensuing oscillation increases to a maximum and then falls, and the period goes up until you come to a point where you have a secondary or reverse bifurcation, and the system restabilizes again at a very low efflux level. So what it predicts is that if you could somehow change the rate of gamma, then if you could decrease gamma, and you had a patient with cyclical neutropenia sitting in here, you would be able to drive the period of the oscillation down, and the amplitude of the oscillation would go up, and the mean value around which the oscillation was occurring should also go up, okay, because that's the steady state. Well, the first test of the hypothesis is to see whether, in point of fact, patients that have neutropenia, cyclical neutropenia, really have an abnormally high number of apoptotic cells in their bone marrow. And when that was actually done about 4 years ago by David Dale, they discovered indeed there were a much higher than normal number of cells that had signs of apoptosis. And this is true not only in patients that have cyclical neutropenia, but also patients that have low levels of neutrophil counts that are not oscillating. Now, the nice thing about this particular problem is that if indeed this is a defect due to dysregulation of the apoptotic mechanism, you can actually change gamma pharmacologically, because one of the major controlling agents that regulates neutrophil production is called granulocyte colony stimulating factor. It's given all the time, it's given routinely in hospitals after chemotherapy and after radiotherapy. And the reason that it's given is that it reduces cell death in the bone marrow, and it allows a very rapid return of cell numbers in the circulation to approximately normal values. It's particularly white cells or neutrophils. So the hypothesis is that if, since the model predicts what you see clinically, and the model also says the only way you can get what you see clinically is by having an elevated rate of apoptosis, that if we reverse that, we ought to be able to do something rather interesting with these patients. Now, here's four patients on the left-hand side before treatment with GCSF, on the right-hand side after. The scale on the left-hand side in terms of the neutrophil count is dramatically different than on the right. In patient one here, this is for a period of 4 months before being treated with GCSF, and you see an oscillation, very low amplitude, going from up to about 1,000 and back down, up, down, up, down. GCSF treatment has started, and now the scale is not from 0 to 1, but 0 to 40. So the amplitude of the oscillation has tremendously increased. The period has decreased rather dramatically, and the mean value has gone up. So this is the effect of treatment with GCSF has the qualitative, all three qualitative effects that is predicted from the modeling of the stem cell dynamics. And this has been a consistent finding in every patient that we've looked at with this type of behavior. And here you see simply the change in the long periodogram. This is before, so the frequency goes from here up to a higher value corresponding to a drop in the period. And this is true in every single patient that we've ever looked at. So GCSF does qualitatively exactly what you expect based on its interference with the rate of apoptosis. I'm not going to go through that. The other thing that's interesting is the following. The top four panels are the entire patient population before GCSF treatment was started. And so, and these were neutropenic patients that were divided into three categories, the so-called cyclical neutropenia patients, chronic and idiopathic neutropenic patients. Now, the first thing that was interesting was that before we got a hold of the data, the congenital, and the idiopathic neutropenic patients, nobody suspected they were actually oscillating. They were. They were oscillating rather dramatically. 11 in each group were oscillating. Now, these patients had actually been diagnosed as having cyclical neutropenia, but it turned out that these guys also had the same disease. So there were a total here of all these patients, we had 33 that were oscillating. After you start giving GCSF, what you find is the number of idiopathic neutropenic patients starts to oscillate, goes from 11 to 14. So we've actually induced oscillation in three of these patients. The GCSF treatment induced oscillation in 18 more patients that were congenitally neutropenic. So this is the group that's down at the low end, and they've been pushed back through the secondary Hopf bifurcation into the zone where they're oscillating. And we've even induced three more patients to start oscillating in the cyclical neutropenia case. So actually, you've virtually doubled the number of patients that are oscillating by giving this treatment. So I think the thing that's interesting about this is that you've actually got a handle from the modeling on what the likely origin of this disease is, and it predicts that if you can actually manipulate this one particular parameter, that you should see a series of qualitative changes take place. And when you do that, you see precisely what the modeling predicts. And furthermore, the modeling also finally predicts that if you decrease the rate of apoptosis sufficiently, then you can actually stop the oscillations completely. You can actually push these patients back to the point where they don't oscillate at all. Now, that's been done in gray colice. It's not been done in humans for a variety of good reasons. Finally, I'd like to talk about one other disease that I do not understand, but it's extremely interesting. It's called periodic leukemia, chronic myelogenous leukemia. It's one of the most common of the chronic leukemias. And the interesting thing is that occasionally you'll have a patient that shows up who has an oscillatory version of it. And here you see leukocyte count, white cell counts and platelet counts oscillating in one particular patient. Here the same type in another patient and another patient. And the periods range over values that are much higher than we see in cyclical neutropenia. They're typically, the low value is about 3.5 months, and it goes up to as long as 3 months. And as in cyclical neutropenia, what you see is always an oscillation in the white cells, the platelets, and in the red cell line. So you're seeing oscillations in all three cell types, exactly as in cyclical neutropenia. But the difference is that the period is much longer, and typically also the oscillations are from normal levels. Here we had to plot the leukocyte levels clear down here, so you're going, you know, hundreds of times normal. The same is true with the platelets, and the reticulocytes tend to oscillate around normal, or a little bit above normal. Now, we don't understand what's going on. I have no idea what's going on with this particular disease. All we know is what we've gotten from the analysis of the clinical data. And it's basically summarized here. We have these oscillations from about 36 to 80 or 90 days. It's always the same in any given patient. You have the same period of the oscillation in all three cell types. There has been some suggestion that part of the origin of this disease is related to a decrease in the rate of apoptosis. And this decrease allows some kind of malignant clone to escape and to selectively proliferate. The question is that we're trying to figure out is whether the dynamics that we see in periodic CML could somehow be connected to a decrease in the rate of apoptosis. If that's true, then it means that conceptually our idea about stem cell regulation has to be substantially modified. So in conclusion, there are a number of hematological diseases that have a really periodic and dynamic character. I've only talked about four, but there are at least 10 that have been identified in the clinical literature, but most of them don't have sufficient data to really make any very intelligent comments about what might be going on. Some of these, like autoimmune hemolytic anemia and cyclical thrombocytopenia, just involve a derangement of a peripheral control loop, one of these negative feedback guys with delays in it. You know, they can be relatively complicated from a mathematical standpoint because the delays are distributed, they can be state-dependent, there's a variety of interesting mathematical problems. And other types, like cyclical neutropenia and periodic leukemia, involve all of the circulating cell types, and I think certainly with cyclical neutropenia is almost with certainty a defect at the stem cell level, and I think with periodic leukemia it is also, because we know that patients with chronic myelogenous leukemia all have a chromosomal defect, the so-called Philadelphia chromosome, and some of them show the periodicity. So the major challenge that I'm trying to deal with at this point is to see whether I can actually understand the dynamics of periodic leukemia from a modeling standpoint. And finally, to close, there have been a number of people involved in this work over the many years that I've been doing it. It's been going on for well over 20 years. And I think I've managed to list everybody here who's been involved at one point or another, some in a major way, some in a minor way, but in point of fact, every single one of them has contributed materially to this work. Thank you very much.